Good afternoon and happy Halloween. In honor of today's special date, we have a really special show for you. We have some wonderful Alaska storytellers that we hope are going to scare the starch right out of you. In the studio with me today, I have Shane Mitchell.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Shane. Welcome.
Thank you.
And I have Rick Goodfellow. Hi, Rick.
Hi.
And we expect Jack Dalton any moment, or maybe his ghost is here. I don't know.
Oh, I hope not. I hope Jack's still with us.
We really want Jack in the flesh here, and we think he's coming any moment. So because this is Halloween, I'm just going to go right to a really scary story or a really cheesy story, whatever we decide to do, with Shane. So, Shane, tell us a story for Halloween.
Well, this is a story I heard when I was a teenager, and it's set out in the Matanuska Valley along the Trunk Road. And isn't that an ominous name right
I'm
there?
Already scared.
Trunk Road. Mm. As the story goes, there was a gentleman who was driving one stormy night. The Trunk Road, as you know, back in the 80s, was not paved. It was dirt, and the trees would lean in so close that if you weren't very careful, the branches would scrape along the sides of the car. As he was driving along, having paid no attention to the gas gauge, shoo-boom, shoo-boom, the car ran out of gas. He opened the door, took out the gas can, and started to walk down the road to the house that he had passed just a few miles before. How dreary it was that night as he turned up the collar of his coat and the rain began to fall. Shh. Down the road he walked, till at last he came to the old house, decrepit, setting back in the woods. A gate led up the path, and he walked up the gravel path, and up the three creaking stairs, to push open the old door. He stepped inside. It was completely black, and as he reached into his pocket to find a match to light the stub of a candle he found, the door slammed shut behind him. Boom! And from over his head, he heard rap, rap, rap. He lit the match, touched it to the candle, and climbed the creaking stairs. And all the while he heard rap, rap, rap. When he reached the top of the stairs, he looked down the hall. It seemed to be endless and filled with blackness. But there was a door to the left. He looked in, and there was the skeletal remains of some unfortunate animal dragged there by some carrion eaters. And all the while he heard rap, rap, rap. He checked across the hall, looking into the blackness, when the lightning flashed and the thunder rolled, and all the while he heard rap, rap, rap. He made his way to the end of the hall, where he heard the terrible rap, rap, rap. And there in the darkness he found a closet door, which he pushed open. And out of the closet and out of the darkness came the rap, rap, rap from an old, old trunk. He lifted the lid of the trunk, and rap, rap, rap assaulted his ears. He looked inside, and do you know what he saw? A roll of red wrapping paper. Yeah.
You had me going.
Well, then you couldn't have been paying too close of attention.
Rap, rap, rap.
When I was in high school, you know, there comes an age when you're too old to trick or treat anymore, and you almost give up on Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
But I had this wonderful American history professor or teacher, high school teacher at Service High School, named Art Elliott, and he devoted one day on Halloween Day
to telling these cheesy stories. And that one has stuck with me all through these years. And every Halloween, I find a way to tell it to some poor unsuspecting sap.
Oh, that's wonderful. You know, I was actually didn't think it was going to be wrapping paper. And so I was thinking, God, I'm glad the lights are on in here. You know. Now I'm saying to the audience, did we tell you we'd have stories for you? We've got stories for you with sound effects.
That's, yeah, there you go.
I love that. So, Shane, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
I wanted to say you have a production on right now that people might want to know about this weekend. I just thought you should just mention it quickly.
Yeah. TBA Theater is producing Macbeth for Halloween. We perform tonight at 7 o'clock, and we have a 10 o'clock show that will end right at midnight. So it'll be a great way to wrap up your Halloween, and we perform all through the weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
So there you go. I mean, obviously, Halloween is a big holiday for you.
Oh, I love it. Always
have. You plan your theater productions around it and all that kind of stuff, and your storytelling. So let's go to – well, actually, I want to let our listeners know how they can engage with us. If you'd like to – you know, tell us what your favorite Halloween traditions are, or maybe if your neighborhood does something fun, you can call and tell us about it. Give us a call at 550-8433, or outside of Anchorage if you're on Trunk Road somewhere.
That's right.
1-888-353-5752. And if you're really scared, or if you're a ghost and you want to just send us an email, you can send it to alaskapublic.org. Hometown@alaskapublic.org. And just to let you know, we won't be broadcasting this program again tonight at 7, but it is archived. So if you just want to get scared to death again, you can just go on alaskapublic.org and listen to the podcast. So, all right, we're at Rick Goodfellow, and we know that Rick knows a lot of things about what goes squeak in the night around Anchorage. So why don't you tell us something about what you found out about ghosts in Anchorage?
I started asking people. I would go, I spent 2 years, and it was very, very conscientious, clear decision on my part. Every person I engaged with that went beyond, hi, how are you? I would ask them if they had a first-person ghost story downtown. I was only interested in downtown Anchorage. And most people said no, by far. It was amazing how many people said yes, and in many cases, who they were, people I thought I knew really, really, really well. A name that will be familiar to a number of people listening, he's been around here since 1950, Al Bramstead Jr., son of a great pioneer broadcaster. Mm-hmm. In fact, he just spoke about it at the noon hour today. He had an office in the 4th Avenue Theater that happened in a previous incarnation to belong to Cap Lathrop, pioneer Alaska businessman. And one early evening in 1992, Al was headed along 5th Avenue, and he just glanced over his shoulder at his office. Those windows still overlook 5th Avenue. There's four windows on the second floor of the 4th Avenue. And Al said, well, that's very strange. I know I turned the lights off when I left. And not only that, there's someone in there. So Al didn't keep on going. He made a 90-degree turn and went into the back of the 4th Avenue Theater where there's a fire escape. That door is still there, too. Al had the pass key. Well, as he got closer, what was just a sort of vague figure when he made his turn got clearer and clearer and clearer, and the glare on the window changed, and he realized that it looked exactly like Cap Lathrop. And we need to pause for a moment. Cap was dead before Al Bramstead Jr. was born. But his father was an employee of Cap's and had a portrait, a painted portrait by Ted Lambert of the great Cap Lathrop, as well as a huge collection of photos. Al had grown up in the whole shadow of the legend of Cap Lathrop, amazing pioneer Alaskan. And there he was, having been dead 42 years, but there he was in what Al took to be his office. So, of course, Al got excited, and he wanted to have a discussion about early Alaska and who would know more than Cap Lathrop. So Al didn't keep walking to that fire escape. He broke into a run, got there as fast as he could, unlocked the door as fast as he could, ran up that one flight of stairs, got to his office, which was locked. That's how Al left it. Got that door open as fast as he could and found the lights on, although Al was sure he turned them off. But no Cap Lathrop or anybody else or any sign anyone had been in there. Mm. Only three people had keys to that office. And to this day, Al, who is a long ways from, oh, I feel your aura, he's not that sort of fellow at all, said it had to have been the ghost of Cap Lathrop. It could not have been anything else. And he still believes it to this day. No other paranormal experience or belief previous to that in Al's life. But he knows what he saw, and he believes it fervently today. When you start running into people of the credibility of Al Bramstead Jr., who speak with the certainty, and it's not that someone's friend's hairdresser's pal thinks they saw, mm-hmm. It's Al said, I know what I saw. I know when it was. I was here. Then I walked here. Then I walked here. Then I walked here. You begin to realize there's something to all this.
Well, when people tell you, like when Al told you that story, do they like try to tell you in private or do they glance over their shoulder? Do they feel foolish telling you that story? Can you detect anything like that?
It comes in all flavors.
Uh-huh.
And a corollary to your question. And I will answer your question more directly, but a corollary is part of the dangers of doing a ghost tour is that once you get known for being a collector of ghost stories, then all sorts of people begin to volunteer things and you begin to have to put up higher and higher standards of truth, I think. Uh-huh. People who want to get aboard, they're less credible than the people who confided in me originally, at least in my opinion.
Uh-huh.
But in answer to your question, sure, there are people who, well, don't tell anyone but. But the people who are really at home with it, like Al, I just know what I saw. This is what happened. You believe it? Don't believe it. I don't care. That's mm-hmm. kind mm-hmm. of where
I'm just
Al's
telling you point. What I saw.
Or Rochelle Edelin at the Hotel Captain Cook, or staff people at the historic Anchorage Hotel, or what's now called the Anchor Bar. It's just on the table. That's what it is.
Uh-huh.
Now, for sure, there are people who will only talk to me in private, but I don't break that confidence.
Mm-hmm. So if someone told you something privately, this is a lesson to our audience. If they want to talk to Rick and tell him a scary thing, he'll protect their name. But I guess you don't
I'm
have
thinking that one over.
Listen, if you've just joined us, you know it's Halloween. You're probably in costume or planning to go get candy tonight or give out candy tonight. I just want you to know in the studio with us, we have Shane Mitchell, an actor who told a very scary, cheesy story at the top of the hour, and Rick Goodfellow, who's talking a little bit about the ghost stories of Anchorage. And we think we have the ghost of Jack Dalton in the studio with us, or maybe Jack is going to join us shortly to tell us some tales from the tundra, we hope. So welcome to Hometown Alaska. And, I want to talk a little bit about why we love these stories so much. And you both are obviously conscious of audiences and whether an audience is with you or not with you. What do you think it is about scary stories that makes us lean in and listen? Are we afraid for ourselves?
No, I actually think a ghost story is cathartic. Mm-hmm. There are real horrors that we deal with all the time, right? There's all of these pressures of life. Am I going to lose my job? Am I going to get in a car crash? Is something terrible going to happen to my children? And those are real pressures that we can't find a valve for. But when you listen to a ghost story, when you can really get involved in it, there's a catharsis that comes that helps relieve some of that tension. One of the things that I've noticed, and I don't know what Rick's experience is, but when people ask me to tell ghost stories, overwhelmingly, young people just love them. Teenagers love them almost more than anybody else. And that I think they're under that level of pressure that a ghost story is very cathartic. Plus the fact, I think most people, and I might get calls on this one, most people at some level or another believe or want to believe mm-hmm. in a ghost.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're looking for that proof,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, when someone's with us, there's so much energy around that person. And then when they're gone, you can't imagine, where does all that energy go?
And what's very strange, well, not strange, but when I was a kid, I was just mentioning to your mother, I grew up very rural. And the people that I grew up with, it's what Rick was talking about, the people he interviews. It's just a matter of fact. Nobody goes, do you believe in ghosts? People will go, I saw Dad. And everybody believed. Everybody had a story. There was no skepticism in my childhood.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just want to welcome Jack Dalton. We've been saying that your ghost was here, and we were waiting for you to come in the flesh. So welcome, Jack Dalton.
Yeah, you want scary? Look at my schedule.
Thank you.
So thank you for allowing me to sneak in.
I knew that you were coming, so yeah. I said, your ghost is here now, but you'll be here later.
Yeah.
But thank you for coming, Jack. And we've been sort of migrating along and telling a story. Do you feel like jumping in with a story?
Sure, yeah.
So Jack Dalton, Alaska Native storyteller, tell us something.
All right. Well, this is a true story, kind of like Rick's. I was listening on the way here, and it happened actually last year.
Wow, recent.
Last October, I was in Dillingham and there for a student leadership symposium and was staying at the Bristol Bay Inn, and I was in room 200 and something. I don't remember the exact room. And I was laying there trying to go to sleep, and there was this sound of someone trying to get into the hotel room. Mm-hmm. And then I listened closely and realized, no, it sounded like someone trying to get out of the room I was in.
Mm.
And then out of the corner of my eye, there was this really green, like, LED glow over by the, in the hallway to the door. And I thought, oh, there must be a safe or something that's over there. And I got up and I went, turned on the light, went over, and there was no safe. There was no LED light there anywhere. I had no idea where this green glow had come from. So I'm like, oh, okay. So I went back and got in the bed and was trying to sleep. And suddenly, the only way I can describe it is that it felt like something trying to get inside me.
Ooh.
Like a presence trying to inhabit me. And it freaked me out. And I turned on the light and I just said, okay, I don't know who's here, but, I'm just staying in this room and everything's okay. And finally, it kept trying to get inside me. So I said, maybe you want to sleep in this bed. I can sleep in the other bed. So I went over to the other bed. I slept that night with the light on, went down the next day on the way to the symposium and just asked the front desk clerk, so does anything happen in that particular room? And she goes, oh. And she talked about how that room is haunted.
Oh.
And that something happened, and several things have happened in there based on what happened some time ago. And I went to the symposium and started talking about this with people, and they're like, oh, yeah, no one ever stays in that room. None of the board members from Bristol Bay Corporation stay in that room. And the interesting thing is that I ended up having to go to the emergency room out there in Dillingham because of something called pleurisy.
Oh.
And so the pleura is the lining around the lung, and it got to the point where I couldn't breathe. It was so bad. And when I got to the hospital, of course, they asked, has anything strange happened lately? Or have you changed your routine? Did you have a cold? Have you been smoking and all this? And I said, no, I couldn't figure out what could have possibly caused this. And it wasn't until this year I was here in Anchorage and I met someone from the Bristol Bay Native Health Corporation and said, oh, yeah, I had a great stay in your hospital and so on and so forth, and explained what had happened. And she goes, well, didn't you tell them about the ghost? So, and what's great about, and the experience, I mean, yeah, it's really scared me.
Yeah.
But when I go out to the villages, there are things I believe in the villages that I wouldn't necessarily believe in Anchorage.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, I just sort of change my spiritual mindset.
Compass
it's like,
points.
Yeah, I'm mm-hmm. going to get out there and I go to a school. And one of the first questions I ask the site administrators is, so are there any ghosts here that I should know about? And, Night Mute has its, little girl, singing girl. And, mm-hmm. and Tununuk has their angry pots and pans in the gymnasium. I mean, every village has its, but then you have the story stories of the little people and the hairy people, and there's just all kinds of amazing spiritual scary stories out there.
Yeah, well, the storytelling tradition is rich out there, too, and I think some of that comes from just history, you know. I know that Polly Andrews is someone I've talked to before, and many of the stories come from the ladies in the village that passed them along, you know. So that's really, really, really fun. So we were just about, before you popped in, we were just about to talk about why people like them, and you were talking about people, everybody being a believer, and you were saying, I think people are believers, whether or not they're willing to admit it or not.
Well, even if they're not believers, I think everybody wants to believe.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And the people who don't believe believe they don't believe.
Ah.
They're the most ardent. Mm-hmm. On a ghost tour, the best person you can get is a skeptic. They work much harder at not believing.
Do they try to unpack your story?
Oh, sure.
And
I love that.
Yeah. Just try. Bring it on. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you one. There's a women's room in the Hotel Captain Cook that's haunted. And there was a woman who showed up with two friends, and she, right from the get-go, she said, I don't believe any of this ghost stuff. I'm a skeptic, but my girlfriends want to go, so I'm a good sport, so off we go. And I always encourage people to take photos inside the women's room. And she was the last one in, and the men, by the way, stay outside. We guard the hallway.
Okay.
But the women went in. She was the last woman in. She had her cell phone up, sort of like the Statue of Liberty. She was waving it around, and she said in this really big voice, "And I'm going to bring you out a photo just to show you there's nothing unusual in here." And when she came back out, she still had her cell phone up like the Statue of Liberty, but she was saying, "How did you do this?"
Mm-hmm.
Now, what it looked like was the whole floor of the stall was covered with what sort of looked like that Christmas decoration angel hair.
Uh-huh.
But no one could see it with their naked eye. All the other women, there were five other women, they all took photos, and it didn't show in their cameras. It only showed in the skeptic's camera. And my personal theory is that when she went in, she made such a big deal, in a big voice. Anyone could have heard her inside or outside the
women's
room.
Almost a challenge, right?
Yeah. So I believe the ghost just said, all right, I'll show you I'm here. I'm not going to reveal myself to anyone else. And she said, my camera never does this. How did you do this? Well, I couldn't do it if I wanted. I wouldn't know how. But she was rather quiet the rest of the whole tour.
I was going to say, how did that affect her? No more skepticism, no more challenges. I don't want any more evidence. You know? That's great. Oh, really amazing. I was, you know, like I told you guys, I was Googling about Halloween. And one of the things I found out, which I think is amazing, is we spend like $8 billion on Halloween, and the average person spends $80. So we're really invested in this. And it's something, I mean, you mentioned that young people really like it.
That's true, yeah.
I did read about a woman was writing about her teenage daughter and how she had to go to every Scream 1, Scream 2, Scream 3 with her daughter. She said if they were Scream 12, we'd have been to Scream 12. And her theory was a little bit like yours. Life is really scary when you're an adolescent, you know, and so you like to go someplace and be scared and it's not really your life, you know.
Right.
Something like that. But I mean, you get a whole range of ages on your tours, right, Rick?
Oh, I've had wheelchairs down to babes in arms.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you particularly get adolescents, or you just get them mixed in with everybody else?
Not so much adolescents. I get mid-age people on the whole.
Mm-hmm.
I get a certain amount of young people. I mean, kids. I don't mean teens. And I get some old folks.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get a lot of teens. Because we're not that kind of tour. My impression is that they want
a haunted house.
They want people dressed in sheets jumping out of dark corners and things like that. And we just don't do that.
Yeah.
And yet I would say that the teens who do come, who are, and I know from the minute I lay eyes on them whether they're going to get into it or not, but the teens who really get into it, really get into it.
Mm-hmm.
They're my kind of teens.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's great. How about the establishments downtown? I mean, it's one thing for locals to know there's a ghost there, but what about all, you know, it's a big tourist town, you know? I mean, so the Anchorage Hotel, where you go down to the Anchorage Hotel, mm-hmm. too. Are they warm to this idea of having entities?
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what their business is built around.
Okay. It works for them.
It works for them. Although I will tell you that Terry, the manager, said, when I first got here, I had two firm beliefs. One, there's no such thing as a ghost. And two, any talk about ghosts is bad for the hotel business. She said, I've changed both views.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's great for the hotel business.
Yeah.
That's great for it.
That's great. Are there particular rooms in the Alaska Hotel that are significant?
Yeah, a few that it's the Anchorage Hotel. Alaska Hotel's down in Juneau. It supposedly is haunted. I'm no expert on that.
You're not doing geographic locations.
Someone should start the ghost tour of Juneau for sure.
But if
you go through they keep a ghost log at the Anchorage Hotel. There's no room that hasn't had some sort of documented manifestation, but there certainly are rooms that are more favored than others.
Wow, that's interesting. If you've just joined us, I just want folks to know who you're listening to. We've got Rick Goodfellow telling us stories about ghosts in Anchorage. We've got Shane Mitchell just telling us generally scary things. and we have Jack Dalton, who's shared a story from Bristol Bay and probably will share more. If folks would like to join us on the show, please feel free to call at 550-8433 or 1-888-353-5752. And before we started, Rick was saying, well, people are going to be calling you and telling you all their ghost stories. And I said, really? You know, I was inviting them to tell us their Halloween traditions, but we'll see if anybody has any ghost stories out there to tell us. So I wanted to ask you guys, do you believe in ghosts?
I'm gonna say the famous quote, I don't believe in ghosts and I hope they leave me alone.
I want to treat them well.
No, the truth is I do. I do believe. I've had experiences that I'm sure a scientist could explain away. But there's something way down deep that I go, no, I believe these. And some of them are creepy Halloween stories. You know, as an actor, Rick was talking about the Haunted Fourth Avenue, which I played on that. And almost every stage in Anchorage has its ghost. And you hear the ghost stories of all of the various stages. And I've experienced stuff in those theaters. And there are those creepy Halloween stories. And then there are the very things that are just extraordinarily personal.
Mm.
Right after my wife's father passed away, I felt very certain that I saw him. And as a matter of fact, not to tell her story or make light of it in any way, but he was very ill and she was in the car. Driving to join her family and had an overwhelming sense of him in the car, so much so that she pulled off to the side of the road and wept and knew. And when she arrived to meet with her family, her mother said, "Your father has passed," and Aaron said, "I know." And so, you know, there are those things that are more homey, almost more comforting than they are chilling. But I believe.
Sort of a solace, kind of a solace.
Yeah.
Especially when you've just lost somebody, it feels good to have them close again.
Yeah.
Or feel them close. Yeah, yeah. How about you, Rick?
I'm a convert. The way I'd answer it, the story I told earlier in the show about Al Bramstead, I don't know if I believe in ghosts, but I believe in Al Bramstead. I mean, what he told me is so credible, and he walks through it and tells the same story again and again. You can't just disregard testimony like that from people of that character. You can't disregard Rochelle Edelin. These are people who just have nothing to gain and actually a lot to lose by telling ghost stories.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, have I personally seen a ghost? No, although I sure knew when my grandmother died. I knew. She came and she gave me a hug. So, yes, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not to say, you see on these ghost hunter shows and things, all these elaborate explanations of what's in the paranormal world. I just don't think we're capable of understanding that. I think we're just projecting our little organizational charts on something we don't begin to understand.
Mm-hmm.
But is there some sort of other life?
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Yeah, yeah. And how about you, Jack?
Oh, definitely. But I think it's something I grew into. Of course, I had a few experiences when I was a kid. Again, my grandfather passed away, and everyone, just based on what was going on with family at the time, I ended up being left alone at the house while my mom flew down to Washington State. And I was just distraught and just cried and cried and cried. Mm-hmm. And suddenly I was comforted. And I just knew it was my grandfather came all the way up from Eastern Washington to comfort me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that a story of it's not spooky scary, but very, very
comforting.
Yeah. And then, like I say, once I started going out to the villages a lot, you know, there are just certain things that you end up accepting. And, you know, it's what's really great is, yeah, you have the native people telling you certain things, but it's also great when the teacher comes up and says, you know, hey, did they tell you about the ghost? And then they say, you know, I didn't believe in the ghost, but I saw her. and it's, you know, and it's not just that. You get people talking about, you know, do you believe in the little people? Did you know I had a little people? Something happened to me. Mm-hmm. And it's great when those beliefs sort of jump cultures, mm-hmm. and reveal themselves to people from different places. So it's not just a certain mindset or a certain way that you were raised that's going to make you believe in a certain thing, but when that, whatever it is, that energy is strong enough in a certain area that it doesn't matter who you are, somehow you're going to experience that.
So you're immersed in it's in the water, maybe it's in the air, it's in the place. Well, we're going to take a little break. I just want to let folks know we're here with Shane Mitchell, Rick Goodfellow, Jack Dalton. We're on Hometown Alaska. We're talking about scary stories. We're going to come back and tell more scary stories. So you're listening to Hometown Alaska. This is Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Hometown Alaska on our website, alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA FM 91.1.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I have had the hair standing on the back of my neck several times in the previous half hour. So we're telling scary stories for Halloween. I have three guests in the studio, Jack Dalton, Rick Goodfellow, and Shane Mitchell. And they have each been telling us some scary stories, and we're going to do that again. But we're going to take a few callers because I think you inspired some people to call up and talk to us. So Carolyn, hello. You're on Hometown Alaska.
Yes, hi. This is Caroline. I lived for about 4 years in American Samoa, and I was wondering from the gentleman I'll ask this question after I say what happened in my own family, but it seemed to me that the folks, one Anglo friend of mine that was in Hawaii had been in Samoa, he said the Hawaiians were even more superstitious, believed in ghosts, whatever, than the Samoans did. And the thing he recounted was he was an assistant manager, and this was a very particular man, and he set up his shoes every night, and everything was nicely polished, the white shoes or whatever you call those things. But anyway, the next morning he woke, and his shoes were scattered all over his room, and no one had been able to get in or out. And he was just kind of nonchalant about it because the hotel he worked at was on top of the area where King Kamehameha had had many fights, and there were lots of dead that were supposedly inhabiting the area in the ghost form. But with my own situation, I got this from my mother, who was very religious, and, you know, I was surprised that she even told the story. But my father had become ill, and she and my brother were going down to Miami, where he had been working, to take care of him. And as she was driving along, she looked up into the back window, and it was as if this hand came across, that she saw this hand go across, not any kind of waving, but just the open fingers, this hand passed over the back window. And she looked at her watch in the glow of the instrument panel and noted the time. And when she got to the room, she sent my brother in, and he came back and said that Dad was dead. And so they got the authorities there and everything. And when she spoke with the coroner and asked about the time of death, it was at the time that she saw the hand and made note of the time. Mm. So that was something which my father was always very spooky in the way he knew things and dreamed about the death of a coworker 2 weeks before it happened. And it was a very bizarre accident that killed the man. So anyway, that was my story. And I wanted to ask, does it seem that in areas where we are not so industrialized, that people have a closer connection or seem to have a closer connection to the world from which the spirits would emanate?
Interesting question.
I got a theory about that.
Okay.
When I was a little boy, my father took me out into the woods and said, Shane, can you see in the dark? And I said, no, I can't see in the dark. And we had a flashlight on. And, you know, of course, I could see in the beam of the flashlight. And he turned off the flashlight, and in a few moments, my eyes adjusted. And I, in fact, could see in the dark. In fact, I could see a great deal more than I could see. You know, in the flashlight beam, everything was illuminated very clearly. But in the moonlight, I could see all of the landscape. I just saw it under a different light. I think one of the things that we have become is so dependent on technology that our natural gifts to be sensitive to such things, we all have them, but we think that we don't because we're so busy staring in the glare of the flashlight.
Mm. And Jack, you're shaking your head yes.
Well, yeah, and also, like traditionally, they spoke of a time when the earth was thin and that meant the line between the real world knocking on, you know, actual things you can feel and touch and the spirit world was very, very thin. Mm. And they actually talk about the world getting thick now, that it's harder to go between those two things, the spirit world and the what we call the real world.
Interesting.
But I agree with the caller that I think people who are more in touch with the environment around them are going to have probably more of those experiences just because they're more open to those things. They're not too focused on the beam of the flashlight.
Right. How about you, Rick?
On the ghost tour, I always love it when there are Alaska Native people. I wish that we don't get enough. I mean, I've got to figure out how to attract more. And, you know, I always hesitate. You know, it's so silly to say, well, Alaska Native people think this. Well, that's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. You know, white people think that. Mm-hmm. No, that's...
Mm-hmm. But broad strokes don't
work. In a very, very, very generalized sort of way, it's been my experience that Alaska Native people are much more at home with the idea of the spirit world. In fact, I know a few who would even take issue with the whole idea of scary story. Well, of course, Auntie's here. Where else would she be?
And what's scary about that?
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
And it's so cool when we get an Alaska Native person who will speak out during the tour.
And share something. Mm-hmm. So we are all in agreement that we think that there might be some truth to the rural. So, Caroline, thank you for calling. I'm going to go to another caller. Hi, Michelle.
Hello. So speaking of Alaska Native people, I am a nurse, and I used to work at the Alaska Native Medical Center, and I worked in the pediatric department. And one of our rooms was haunted there, and I wasn't a believer in ghosts at all until one day I was going around trying to find supplies for a different room, and I went into this one room, and all of a sudden the two TVs in there turned on, and the lights turned on and off. And my coworkers had warned me about this, but it wasn't until I had my personal experience that I went, oh, there is something going on in this room, and it's not faulty electrical systems. So that's just a little story I wanted to share.
Did you try to find out anything about it? Or do you just don't go in that room anymore?
Well, that room in particular, there's actually been, it's kind of a beefed up special room that we've put a lot of our chronically ill kiddos in there in the past, and so there has been some children that have passed away in that room.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, Michelle,
not on my watch, but yeah. Pretty freaky.
Well, thank you. That's a kind of scary story.
I think so.
Thank you for calling up and sharing it. I'm going to welcome Scott to Hometown Alaska. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Kathleen. How are you doing? I got an interesting story to tell you. Here in Anchorage, about 3 years ago, I lived over near the Russian Jack area. And all of a sudden, in the middle of the night, was pitch dark. I woke up, and there was as if there was a smell in the room, as if there were hot wires, as if something was overheating. So I got up and checked the whole house. Nothing was overheating. But out in the hallway, right outside the bedroom, that's where the smell was emanating. And it was got kind of this cold, foggish kind of thing. And you know, I was around with a flashlight trying to check it out. And the smell was there, a very unique smell that I've never smelled before. And so it kind of was kind of spooky. You go back to sleep. So that over a period of about 3 months, this smell came in the middle of the night, and it would stand next to the bed or in the hallway. Finally went out and talked to some people about what was this. Well, we learned some stories about the Russian Jack. I can't say that this is the Russian Jack, you know, ghost around. I can't say that. But we went around and smudged the room at one couple of different times, and then this smell and this kind of coldness came around once before, and this person told us what to do. Sat up in bed, and I told this entity, you don't belong here anymore. It's time for you to go. It's okay to leave. And once after saying that, that was the last I ever smelled or felt of that thing.
Wow.
You know, it was like waiting for somebody in this reality to give it permission to move on. And that was just very interesting, and that was here in Anchorage.
Scott, thank you for sharing that story. When you started to tell it, I had a couple guests who were shaking their heads yes, because this is one you know too, I guess, huh? Or know of?
Here, a lot of, you know, people come on ghost tours, in my experience, half their motivation is to tell their own story.
I want my moment. Yeah.
That's a fine motivation, too.
Yes, yes, because you can expand. And it's actually, they're all engaged then, right? I mean, they're really engaged.
The reason I was nodding was odors.
Oh.
A lot of manifestations involve odors, often tobacco.
Mm.
You know, tobacco, it used to be much more prominent within living memory. But now, even I can smell tobacco smoke. And lots of people comment on pipe smoking, cigar smoking, cigarette smoking in homes and buildings where it isn't done anymore.
And we're so sensitive to it because it's really not around as much as it used to be. What about perfume?
I can't say as I've had anybody tell me about perfume, but I've read some stories. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if it's on the internet, it must be true.
It must be true. If you've just joined us, I just want you to know who you're listening to. It's Shane Mitchell, Rick Goodfellow, and Jack Dalton. And we're talking about scary stories. And we invite you to share a scary story with us. You can call us at 550-8433 or 1-888-353-5752. And we just took a little break, and while we were on the break, we said, where shall we begin when we come back? And we said, okay, we'll listen to a few of our callers, and then we're going to go right to Shane. He's got a story for us.
Well, Rick had told us earlier today about the haunting at the 4th Avenue Theater, and I had mentioned that most theaters get the reputation of being haunted. I know for stories that I've heard that the 4th Avenue Theater, West High School's theater, and the Wendy Williamson Auditorium on the UAA campus all have their own version of the white woman, the woman in white. And in the Wendy Williamson Auditorium, many, many people have experienced seeing the woman in the white dress. But one of the ones that I found to be the most unnerving was one that involved about 340 people who all saw her simultaneously. Mm. Back in the late 90s, I was involved with a production called The Monkey's Paw and Other Tales. And the whole wraparound story of the production was that this old woman would call the community together to tell her ghost stories. And then those ghost stories would become acted out on stage and were these classic pieces like The Monkey's Paw, Phantom Signal Man, and so on. And at the end of the play, the woman who has called for all of these ghost stories is revealed to be a ghost herself. Mm-hmm. And it's this surprise reveal. So we had about 340 people in the audience, school kids and their teachers and chaperones. And the cast was taking questions and answers from them. And we asked this one young person their question. They said, at the end of the play, how did you make the woman in the white dress float over your head? And I said, what? And his teacher said, he wants to know how the special effect works, how you made the woman in the white dress float over your head. And I said, next question. And the whole audience just erupts in laughter because they think I don't want to reveal how a special effect works. The reality of it was there was no special effect, but that entire audience had experienced seeing that woman in the white dress float above the heads of the cast.
Wow. 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 You guys, we have drawn in the ghost storytellers, so let's go to the phones and give them a chance. That, as Rick says, they join the tours so they can tell their story. Hi, Charlie. You're on Hometown Alaska.
Uh-huh. Hi. How you doing?
Just great.
Great. Well, my story is kind of a minor one. It's no big deal, but it took place in a small theater at a university that used to be called Alaska Methodist University. Shane may be familiar with it.
You're Charlie Cardwell. How are you, buddy?
Great.
Are you going to tell me a ghost story about Grant Hall? Because I'm performing there right now, so
don't scare him.
Okay, so there I was, way back, many moons ago. I used to stage manage the theater, and for a while, for reasons that are unknown even to me, I slept in my office. And I remember working on a show that was called The Cave, that was being directed by Frank Brink. And this was in the early 70s. And I was doing the lighting and stuff, and I couldn't sleep one night, and I was just kind of wandering around. I love theaters at night when there's nobody there. And I recall Shane mentioning something about the ghost of the theater. And during my tenure, when I was working with Anchorage Community Theater, when they were at AMU in the theater there, I was told about the ghost light, which on a number of occasions in shows that I worked on, it was my responsibility to put the ghost light out on the stage every night when rehearsal was over and turn it on to appease the ghost of the theater. So I was fooling around. I couldn't sleep, so I figured, okay, I'll work on some light stuff. So I was in the balcony, and I'm assuming it's still there, though I don't know. It used to be open, and it's in the back of the theater.
It still is.
Is it still open?
Yep.
Yeah. So the acoustics in that theater are phenomenal, because there have been many times when I've been working there up in that balcony, and I could hear people talking backstage practically. So I'm up there, I'm fooling around, and I start hearing voices. Just whispers, and I couldn't make out what anyone was saying. So I start calling out, "Is anybody there? Is anybody there?" And nobody answers. So I figure, okay, I got friends making jokes on me. So I'm wandering back and forth the balcony, trying to eyeball them, trying to see what's going on the stage, if there's anything. And I keep hearing these whispers. And finally, I give up. I go downstairs. Nobody's answering me, and I wander all through that theater for about a half an hour trying to find somebody. I went outside trying to find a door cracked open or people sneaking away, running away, and I never found anybody. There was nobody in the theater, nobody around. I went back inside. I went back upstairs to the balcony, and I sat there for about a half an hour just waiting to see if anything would happen. Nothing else happened the rest of the night. This day, I still recall that moment when I heard those whispers, the voices whispering, as though they were people on stage talking. I could never understand what they were saying, but I have never worked in a theater where I didn't make sure there was a ghost light up.
Now, I don't know what a ghost light is. What is a ghost light?
A ghost light is something that we leave on a theater, on a stage. Generally, it's just a naked bulb, and it serves the dual purpose of... If somebody comes in late at night, you don't fall off the edge of the stage.
Sure.
You've got at least a minimum amount of illumination. But the tradition of calling it a ghost light is because, as I've said, most theaters have the reputation of being haunted, and you don't want to leave the ghost in the dark.
Okay.
You want to keep your local theater ghost happy.
Oh, that's great.
That's right. You have the ghost light up to appease the spirits, or who knows what will happen.
Oh, that's right. Well, Charlie, I'm going to be thinking twice about Grant Hall when I'm over there. I'll be looking over my shoulder. And I won't be going there at 3 o'clock in the morning just to see what happens. So, thanks, Charlie. We had a caller from the Anchorage Hotel, but we've lost him, so I hope he'll try us back again. But let's move along and tell another story. Rick, are you up for another story?
Well, I'm up for another story, but actually I think it might be better if I asked a follow-up question
to
Shane.
All right.
Now, it's a rare night on the ghost tour. Well, I wouldn't say a rare night. It's often on the ghost tour of Anchorage that people, particularly early 20s type people, will say, "Do you know the Mitchells?" you cut a wide swath out there at UAA. But one thing I've heard repeatedly, and in fact from a staff member, is the sound of the piano playing in the Wendy Williamson.
I was actually telling Kathleen this story just before it began. One of the things that people don't many people don't realize is that Wendy Williamson was not a woman. It was a man named John Wendell Williamson, who was one of the very first music teachers for the University of Alaska Anchorage, and in fact was a great jazz musician downtown. And one of the things that will happen very often is that people will hear the piano play with no one there. And the specific instance that I was telling Kathleen was there was a musical rehearsing on the stage, and I remarked that the farther I would get away from the stage, the more clear I could hear the music. Then I realized what I was hearing was music coming out of the lobby. I went down the stairs, the music continues to play, but as I rounded the corner to look at the piano, the music stopped and no one was seated at the piano.
And if I could just add, I happen to have known Wendy.
I do too. Actually, I told you, Wendy played at my wedding. And actually, Brenda Volgamore sang, and it was so much fun. They were just a wonderful group, and he was a fabulous piano player.
Indeed.
I don't believe I've ever seen his ghost, though.
But I would just say the personality, I mean, such a positive, loving person with some issues, but a very positive. If anybody is going to come back and play the piano, it would be Wendy Williamson.
That's great. That's great. By the way, Shane, you mentioned my mom, and I don't want people to think that she's a ghost in this.
No.
So my mom is here. Eileen McCoy is here visiting from the Bay Area, and so she got to sit in with us, and she's just listening to these ghost stories. So that's my mom. So, Jack, I want to jump over to you. How about something from your round of storytelling?
Sure, and we'll go right into actual scary story, not ghost story, but scary story, and one of the freakiest stories in the sort of Bering Sea repertoire is the story of the Big Mouth Baby. And this was a baby that was born very, very long ago. And this baby had this horrendously huge mouth with rows and rows and rows of teeth, sharp teeth.
Pretty scary image.
Very scary image to begin with. And the mother was just so aghast by this and, of course, didn't want to feed this child and so buried it. Alive, and later that night, when everyone was sleeping, they heard this horrible sound coming from outside, and they didn't know what it was. And suddenly, this baby crawls into the house, the kaskig, the community house where people are sleeping, and just starts eating people, and ended up eating the entire village, and then was still hungry and ate the actual village itself, the houses and things. And there are many different versions of the story. In one version of the story, the baby was so hungry it ate itself. In other versions of the story, it just wandered off into the wilderness and no one has seen it again, but every once in a while you'll hear the sound. Mm-hmm. The Big Mouth Baby is one of those stories. It's
why do we have this story? Is there a cautionary tale about eating too much, or what is it about?
There's in some versions of the story it has to do with the responsibility of the mother, and the fact that she wasn't responsible, and this is what happened.
That makes sense.
But as far as why it was a Big Mouth Baby, who knows
where that came from?
Yeah, and what would be really fascinating, this is something I would just really wish could happen. Maybe the ghosts are the people we need to ask about this. What was the story like long? How did that story start, and did it morph into what it is now, the Big Mouth Baby story, or some of these other stories, Big Fiery Hand, the Flying Head, all these different stories that now we tell this way, but how did they start out?
What were they like in the beginning, and how have they changed? Because they're like an oral tradition, so they do change. Yeah, I often imagine that there's a warning there, some kind of a message, especially when I think of rural areas and safety issues, things like that, maybe being safe out in open spaces or on the water or something like that. But that doesn't explain ghosts at the Anchorage Hotel. Exactly.
No, but if I could just jump in on this.
Sure.
You've heard that wonderful phrase, a face only a mother could love.
Yes.
Well, this apparently was a face even a mother couldn't love. But when you really think about it, what's more unnatural, a, ugly baby with teeth and a big mouth or a mother who doesn't love her own offspring? Mm. I would say the latter.
Yeah, it's horrible.
That's unnatural.
It's scary. It's deeply jarring, you know, because it's not human to turn away from your baby.
Yeah.
So very, very scary. Well, we have, I don't know, 5 minutes left. What can we do? Do you want to tell some little short stories or?
Well, I've got a little, you know, theaters keep turning up here.
They certainly do. Yes.
And for good reason.
Yes.
You know, so much energy gets implanted in theaters because not only do performers give off energy, but audiences do. If they get wrapped up in a performance, they give off energy. I would say, on the whole, the second most active paranormal site in Anchorage is the building that's now called the Anchor Pub.
Really?
But, in fact, that originally was a theater. It was a theater into the 50s. It was Cap Lathrop's Empress Theater. And they showed silent movies. Well, then, when they built it, it was only silent movies that existed. Then it converted to talkies, and occasionally they did live performances there. It was rigged, had a wonderful stage by all accounts. If you can find anyone who works at the Anchor who doesn't have their own first person ghost story, I know who it is. There's only one. Tim the doorman says, I've never personally seen or experienced anything I couldn't explain. Everybody else at the Anchor has a story or multiple stories. And real quick, this is the most punctual ghost I know. Saturdays and Sundays, they have a luncheon service up in what used to be the projection booth, sort of the mezzanine underneath you as you go in, above you as you go in. And that needs to be set for service. And the fellow who sets it says, every Friday night when I'm setting it, I see a man come from the back and head for the projection booth, what he would think is the projection booth. The first 8 or 9 times it happened, I thought it was a patron who's out of bounds. I have to go throw him out. He's never there. He said, now it's just, I ignore him. You know,
it's the ghost.
he's there. I've got business to do. I can't be chasing ghosts.
Oh, my gosh. So that's all these buildings. I was thinking Club Paris. That was a mortuary.
Originally built to be a mortuary.
Is there a ghost story there? No.
Oh, yes. Emily.
Emily. Okay. We might have to save that one for another time. I don't know. Do you either of you have like a 30-second story you could tell? No? Then we're just going to thank you so much for coming. Jack Dalton. I'm going to be thinking about the baby with the big mouth. Rick Goodfellow. I'll never think about the Anchor Pub again without that. And obviously, Shane Mitchell, thank you so much. You guys have just been fantastic. And thanks to our callers who also had some pretty good stories to share with us. I can't believe that you were right. They would call and wanted to get in on it.
Not a single question.
No skeptics. No skeptics. They were all true believers.
Yep.
Thank you all so much. I want to let folks know that next week we have an election coming up. And so Charles Wolforth is going to next week on Hometown Alaska follow up on election coverage. Hometown Alaska is on the web at alaskapublic.org. You can join us on Facebook at Alaska Public. Pat Yak is the Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Spack is our wonderful web editor and audio engineer. Thanks so much for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy, and have a wonderful, wonderful Halloween.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.